Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another great episode of the Jack Benny Show. As we turn into the first week of 1941, this year gets swept into the whole war years so often. But really, if you think about it, it's certainly Pearl Harbor happened during this year, but it wouldn't be until December 7th. And so that's a whole, 11 months away. And so there's basically a whole year of another year of programming that is the pre-war programming of the Jack Benny Show. And then once December 7th, 1941 hits, then we get into the war years episodes where he's going to lots of camps and stuff. So this is still, a lot of people don't treat it this way, but it's still the pre-war episodes of the show. And they're still making new ground all the time, and so it's kind of fun to listen to these episodes as they lead up into the war years. For tonight's episode, we get everybody gets a chance to be in the episode quite a bit, and we get a visit from Schlepperman. And Schlepperman, in this episode, is talking about selling hot dogs and things, doing the same thing with that at the episode 5 years after this one that we played on Tuesday, had Mr. Kitzel being introduced selling hot dogs at the Rose Bowl game. So it's kind of neat how they talk about the Rose Bowl game on both. That's one of the advantages of playing the episodes from the same time of year. You can kind of compare the episodes as they're going through the same things. Like last week, you were able to compare all the different New Year's shows with the New Year's fantasies. And this week, you can kind of go, ooh, they're both talking about the Rose Bowl. Kind of interesting. And we're, of course, experiencing the same time of year with the Rose Bowl and things in our year. Of course, now they call it probably the Fiesta Rose Bowl or something. I can't remember. All the bowls sort of have a secondary name now from their sponsors, which I guess calls back to, I'm surprised they didn't have it back then, because, of course, you had, it wasn't the Jack Benny Show as much as it was the Jell-O Show featuring Jack Benny. So it's kind of more similar to the way they did advertising back then, I suppose. Let's stick on Schlepperman for a minute. I mentioned on, if you listened to last Sunday's podcast, how they're starting to show on the RTV network. And here in the Northwest, we're starting to get the Jack Benny shows again. It's 7 o'clock on Sunday nights, which is really cool. And the one they showed was, I think it might be the only appearance of Schlepperman on the television show. And he appeared because they had an episode that they had were refilming that originally had Kitzel in it. But Artie Arbach, who plays Mr. Kitzel, had died about, you know, what, four or five years before this episode, a 1964 episode. And so they decided to get Sam Hearn to play Schlepperman, which he hadn't done in years. And it's kind of funny to hear Jack say, well, where you been all these years? And he said, I moved to Hawaii. And so it's just kind of neat to hear Schlepperman again. We, to celebrate that the kind of Schlepperman sort of week here by accident, on Saturday night, we're having classic Benny shows that are going to turn into the episodes that are exactly 75 years old once we, like, catch up with them. The episodes are missing pretty much until, like, February, and then they're going to start having episodes that are exactly 75 years old. This time, I'm just kind of showing classic episodes. Last week, I showed the very first Jack Benny episode ever. And this week, we're going to jump ahead a little bit and play the very first appearance of Schlepperman on the Jack Benny Show, played by Sam Hearn. And so you'll get a chance to experience that. And a lot of people don't even know that episode exists because it's never been titled like Schlepperman's first appearance or anything. It has a normal title, and you wouldn't know it unless you read up about it or unless you're reading one of Laura's books where she talks about what's happening in each episode. But we'll get a chance to talk about that. And so enjoy this episode with Schlepperman, and tune back in on Saturday for Schlepperman's first appearance.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Moon Over Tarzana. Bright and gay and so exciting, quick and thrifty and inviting. Full of flavor, rich and mellow, all together, this spells Jell-O. Yes, friends, Jell-O is certainly an all-around good dessert. It's a dessert that has everything. Rich, shimmering colors that tell you here's a mighty swell treat. And a world of grand, intriguing flavor. Flavor so pleasing, so refreshing, so downright satisfying that it rivals the real juicy ripe fruit itself. Jell-O is easy to prepare, too. One of the simplest and quickest desserts you can possibly serve. And, of course, you can treat the family to a delightful Jell-O dessert for only a few pennies. So order Jell-O tomorrow, choosing any or all of Jell-O's six delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, or lime. Incidentally, strawberry and raspberry Jell-O are now better than ever. Both have a new, improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. Try these grand flavors and enjoy Jell-O's rich, distinctive goodness. Serve a tempting mold of Jell-O tomorrow. That was Moon Over Tarzana, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this being the 5th day of January, we bring you a man who is still doing his Christmas shopping, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, when you saw me in that department store yesterday, I wasn't shopping. I was exchanging some of my Christmas gifts.
Well, that's quite a coincidence. I was doing the same thing. Would you believe it, Jack? Three different friends gave me electric razors.
Now, you think that's bad? I got enough bottles of cologne to have people whistle at me for the next 10 years. No kidding, Don. I must have gotten 25 bottles of that stuff.
Oh, what are you going to do with it all?
I gave it to Rochester, and he's going to throw a cocktail party. He mixes it with orange ice and calls it a Central Avenue lullaby. But when you saw me in that store, Don, I was only exchanging the gift Phil Harris gave me.
You were? Why, Phil told me he gave you a lovely present.
Oh, it was lovely, yes, but I don't know, I didn't feel right in it.
Oh, well, you shouldn't have exchanged it, Jack. You'll hurt his feelings.
I don't care whether I hurt his feelings or not. I'm too old for an Indian suit. I don't know what's the matter with Phil. He gives the darnest Christmas presents. Last year, he sent me a manhole cover. Imagine a manhole cover.
Oh, yes, I remember that. What'd you ever do with it, Jack?
What could I do? I put Home Sweet Home on it and hung it on the wall. And I wish you could have seen what the... Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Happy New Year, Don.
Same to you, Mary.
What about me? It's a wonder you wouldn't thank me for the swell time I showed you New Year's Eve. You didn't even phone me.
I want to do it big. I'm going to hire a skywriter.
It won't be necessary. You know, Don, I took Mary to the Wilshire Bowl. And boy, was I raring. At the stroke of 12, I grabbed a horn and blew the old year right out.
You did, huh?
Yep.
And at 12:01, Jack put the horn in his pocket and said, "Let's go home."
Mary, the only reason I suggested going home early was because I didn't want to have a hangover the next day.
A hangover? From what? Breaking balloons?
Listen, Mary, don't try to give the impression that I'm an old dodo. I was the life of the party. I had you on that dance floor every minute.
Anything to keep me from eating.
You ate, sister. You believe me, you had the special T-bone steak with French fried potatoes and choice of two vegetables, including tax, $1.29. You know very well you had a swell time.
Okay, I had a swell time.
You darn tootin'.
Say, Mary, is Jack a good dancer?
I couldn't tell. That was the first time I ever did the turkey trot.
That wasn't the turkey trot at all. I was doing the La Conga.
The La Conga?
Yes. Couldn't you hear me going? One, two, three, One, two, three, One, two, three, What'd you think that was?
I thought your rheumatiz was giving you the biz.
That was very funny, Mary. You know, I wonder why you and Phil don't quit this program and get one of your own. Harris and Livingston, every week an audition. You're too smart for this show. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Happy New Year.
Same to you, kid.
Has anybody an aspirin? Oh, boy, what a head I got.
Why, Dennis, I'm ashamed of you.
I bumped it getting out of my car.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. You can bump your head. I thought you meant you'd been celebrating too freely. By the way, Dennis, where did you go New Year's Eve?
I went there. Don't worry.
Oh. Okay. Say, I wonder what's keeping Phil.
You went where, Dennis?
Never mind.
I went there every night, just like you told me to.
All right. Say, Don, have you seen...
Dennis, where have you been going every night?
Mary, it's none of your business.
It's a good picture, all right, but gee, I can't laugh all the time.
Dennis, please.
I'd rather go back to mowing your lawn.
Now, Dennis, I don't want to hear another word about it.
Why, Jack Benny, do you mean to say you've been sending the kid downtown to laugh at your picture every night?
Mary, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, Dennis, it's time for your song. So let's have it.
My girl laughed at Fred Allen, but don't worry, I kicked her.
Now, Dennis, everybody's waiting for your song, so let's have it, please. What's it going to be?
A brand new number called I'm Gonna Round Up My Love.
That'll be fine. Go ahead. And by the way, if your girl thinks Fred Allen is so funny, get another one. Mary, stop looking at me like that. Do you hear?
Oh, brother.
I wish that kid wouldn't babble so much.
I'm a roaming cowhand, singing as I ride. For my gal, I'm a searching and a needing her by my side. I'm gonna round up my love, gonna win her tonight in the prairie moonlight. I'm gonna round up my love, gotta make her agree to belong to only me. Then together we'll ride high, and together we'll sing low, side by side, roaming the range, we'll go. I'm gonna lasso my gal, gonna make her my pal. I'm gonna round up my love. Yippee-yippee, I ride high. Yippee-yippee-oh, sing low. Side by side, roaming the range, we'll go. I'm gonna make her my pal. I'm gonna round up my love.
was I'm Gonna Round Up My Love, sung by Dennis Day. There you are, Dennis. That was swell. You were in very good form.
Thanks, Jack.
Jack? Why, Dennis, what's come over you? You've always called me Mr. Benny.
Well, I saw so much of you last week, I feel like we're old friends.
Oh, I see what you mean. But you know, Dennis, I kind of like the idea of your calling me Mr. Benny. It adds a little dignity to the program and shows your respect for me.
Do you want me to call you Mr. Benny, too?
That won't be necessary, Mary.
Gee, I can call him Jack.
And now, folks...
Wait till the girls at the May Company hear about this.
Now, wait a minute. Don't get smart, Miss Livingston.
Oh, do call me Mary.
Now, cut that out! You asked me a question, I answered it. Now, let's forget it. Well, look who finally breezed in.
Hiya, Jackson. Am I late?
No, Phil. We realize that taking up a half hour of your valuable time once a week is quite an imposition.
Now, hold on, Jackson.
In fact, Phil, I think that next Sunday I'm going to have a microphone installed across the street in the pool room so you can say hiya, folks, without putting your cue down. Would you care for that?
Now, before you ball me out, Jackson, I want to tell you that I'm a changed man. You're looking at the new Harris.
Oh, I am, eh?
I'm not kidding. No. On January the 1st, I made a resolution. I'm going to cut out smoking, cut out drinking, cut out gambling, and I'm going to cut out staying up so late.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. When are you going to cut out running after women?
When they stop running.
I thought so. Well, Phil, here's another resolution for you during this new year. Why don't you learn something about music?
You mean I should be like Stokowski?
No, Phil. All I ask is when you pick up a piece of paper that has lines across it and little black dots all over it, don't look at your boys and say, there's a spy around here. This stuff is in code. Little as they know, it embarrasses them.
Okay, Jackson, that'll be another one of my resolutions.
Speaking of resolutions, Jack, I've resolved that during 1941, I'm going to find new ways to tell people about Jell-O.
You are, kiddo?
Yes. Instead of telling them about strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime, I'm going to mix them up and say, strawberry, lime, raspberry, lemon, orange, cherry, and.
Oh, the and at the end. Gee, they'll never dream it's the old Jell-O show. Anything else, Don?
Yes. Remember how I always used to say, look for the big red letters on the box?
Uh-huh.
Well, this year I'm going to say it backwards.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Box thee on, letters red big, thee for look.
Well, mouth my shut. Don, that's a very novel idea.
Oh, thanks, Jack. I'm awfully glad you like it.
I'll see you get a raise for that. Backwards. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we will have a number by Phil Harris and his orchestra, who will play it not backwards, not forwards, but in their usual manner. They will start in the middle and blast both ways. All right, Phil, let's have it.
Okay. Say, by the way, Jackson, I got my expense account on our New York trip all made out. You want to see it now?
No, Phil, I'll look it over later. What is the total up to?
$3,427.
Give me that. Let me see that expense account.
There you are. I got the whole thing itemized.
That's itemized. Itemized. If you don't mind, I'll look it over. Let's see here. Hotel room, $42 a week. That's reasonable. Meals for 2 weeks, $63. That's very reasonable.
You don't have to read it, Jackson. It's in perfect shape.
I'll just give it a quick glance. Now, let's see.
Hey, Jack, look. There's one item you can't complain about.
Where?
Right there. Laundry for 2 weeks, 37 cents.
Oh, yes. That's not bad. Let's see what else he has here. Bottle opener, 10 cents. Ice, $2.50. Bromo, $135.
What do you want us to play, Jackson?
Wait a minute, Phil. I'm not through yet. taxi cabs, 11:50, that's okay. Charles Bagby, musical arrangements for orchestra, 37 cents. 37 cents.
That must be the same guy that does his laundry.
Yeah. See, what else is here? IGR, $45. $45. Phil, what's this IGR?
I got robbed.
My goodness, you don't expect me to pay for that.
You don't expect me to pay for that, do you? Oh, what are you beefing about? I never even charged you for bailing out my guitar player.
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you. Now, let's see. Well, here we are again. Bromo, 100. Phil, you and I will talk this whole thing over later. In the meantime, let's have a band number.
Okay.
Look at this next item, Mary. Elevator, $400. What could he want with an elevator? Some Changes Made, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra, where there will be some changes made. And, Phil, getting back to your New York expense account, it's a ridiculous total, and I'm not paying for all of your hilarity.
Okay, Jackson, but as long as we're on the subject of dough, how about that $50 I won from you from the Rose Bowl game?
That you can take to court. I didn't see the game, Phil, so the bet's off.
I thought you'd squirm out of it.
Well, Jack, I thought you told me you were going to the Rose Bowl game.
I did go, but I didn't stay.
Tell him what happened, Jack.
Mary, Don wouldn't be interested.
Oh, yes, I would. What happened, Mary?
Well, Don, it was like this.
The woman for you.
Jack got the tickets and told us to meet him in front of Tunnel 16 at 1:30.
1:30.
Well, anyway, Phil Dennis and I took a cab. But when we got to the bowl, Jack wasn't there yet. So we waited and waited and waited. You should have seen the crowd, Don. There were thousands of people.
Programs, programs. Names and numbers of all the players. Program, miss.
No, thanks. Come on, fellas, let's go in.
We can't go in. We got to wait for Jackson.
Yeah, he's got the tickets.
I don't see why he didn't come with us.
Well, you know how romantic Jack is. He's bringing his girlfriend Gladys to the game, and they're driving out alone in the Maxwell.
Say, that little waitress ain't so bad looking when she gets dressed up. I think that Jackson's stuck on her.
You said it.
Yeah, he said it.
Dennis, why don't you go get lost in the crowd?
Don't think I couldn't.
Hey, look, Mary, ain't that Jack and Gladys coming this way?
Oh, yes. Jack would be wearing a beanie. And get a load of that fur coat on Gladys.
Gee, Gladys, I never saw you looking so good. You're sure pretty when you're all dolled up.
Thanks, Petey.
I mean it.
Get your programs here. Program, mister, 15 cents.
Oh, Speedy, can I have a program?
You're darn right you can. Here's a half a dollar, buddy. Keep the change.
Oh, boy, now I can get my toupee out of Hawk.
Well, here's the gang, Gladys. Hiya, fellas. All set for the game?
Yeah, I've been waiting on you, Jackson. Come on.
Say, Gladys, you know Mary and Dennis, don't you?
Sure. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Gee, Gladys, that's a pretty fur. Did you trap it yourself?
You know darn well I gave it to her for Christmas. Oh, pardon me, honey. Do you know Phil Harris?
Do I?
Hmm.
Hiya, Gladys. I'll have a ham on rye.
Now, Phil, cut that out. Not working today. Come on, fellas. Here's our gate. Let's go.
Tickets, tickets. Hold your own stubs, please.
Here you are.
Oh, hello, Gladys.
Hello, Eddie. How are you?
Fine. Taking your old man to the game?
I'm not her old man. I'm her fella. Come on, sweetheart. Say, where's Dennis?
I'm stuck in the turnstile.
Well, push it a little, for heaven's sake.
Here's Tunnel 16 over this way.
Oh, yeah.
Say, Gladys, are you still working at the Shamrock Cafe? No, I'm at a drive-in now. Speedy thought I ought to be outside where it's healthier.
Darn right. What's the use of being in California and not enjoy the sun? It's great for you.
Yeah, I wish I could get off the night shift.
You will, honey. Well, here's the entrance, kids.
Say, look who's here. Hiya, Gladys. Happy New Year.
Same to you, Lefty.
Lefty? Hmm. Who's that fresh guy, Gladys?
Lefty Flanagan. Boy, can he drive a truck.
I can imagine.
Hey, look, there's a hot dog stand. Let's eat.
Yeah, you want a hot dog, Gladys?
I'm not hungry right now.
Okay, we'll get him inside.
Better get one now, Gladys. You know Seedy.
That's Speedy. All right, I'll go over and buy the hot dogs. Everybody wait here so you won't get lost. Hey, mister, five hot dogs, please.
Five puppies coming up? Oh, hello, stranger.
Why, Schlepperman! Well, of all people, Schlepperman, are you running a hot dog stand now?
Look at my sign, Jackie boy. All the hot dogs you can eat for 10 cents.
That's fine, but how can you make money with an offer like that?
Taste one and you're tasting the answer.
Oh, they're pretty tough weenies, eh?
What suitcase handles they would make.
Well, they still look good to me. Give me five of them.
Okay, what kind of mustard do you want?
Mustard? What kind?
Yeah, sure. I got strong, mild, and Chanel number 5.
Oh, mild, I guess. How much do I owe you?
5 hot dogs, 50 cents.
Well, that's fair enough. Here's a dollar.
Here's a quarter. Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome. So long, Schlepp.
So long. Get your red hats here. You ain't kept till you dine with Schlepp.
Well, here you are, kids. Take your hot dog.
Thanks, Jack. Here's my dime.
Keep it. Everything's on me today.
Gee, I'm thirsty. What are we going to drink with our hot dog?
Here you are, Gladys.
Put that back in your pocket. Phil, just for once, why don't you see a football game where 4 teams aren't playing? Now, where's Dennis?
He'll be back in a minute.
Oh. Well. Well, he's got his own ticket. Let's go in. Here's the tunnel.
Gee, it's dark in here.
Huh?
So dark in here.
Yeah.
Say, Speedy, remember the time we went through the Tunnel of Love at Ocean Park?
Oh, Gladys, for heaven's sake. Cut it out.
Oh, I'm sorry I slapped you.
Gladys, it's all over. Forget it. Now, come on.
Stubbs, please.
There you are.
Right this way. Oh, hello, Gladys.
Hello, Nick. Were you been keeping yourself?
Oh, I've been around where you been.
Come on, show us our seats. Listen, Gladys, you have to talk to every fella you meet.
Oh, Speedy, you're so jealous.
I'm not jealous.
Here are your seats, mister.
Thanks. Say, these seats are all right, aren't they?
Yeah, right on the old 40-yard line.
Say, Jack, who's playing here today?
Two of the finest teams in the country, Stanford and Nebraska.
And why does your pennant say love thy neighbor on it?
I gotta wave something, don't I? You know, I kind of like Nebraska.
Well, I'm for Stanford. You want to make a little bet, Jackson?
Yeah, I might.
Hey, Gladys, how are you?
Oh, there's Lefty Gordon. Hello, Lefty.
Another lefty. Don't you know anybody that's right-handed?
Well, I used to go with him.
Used to. You're going with me now. I wish you wouldn't talk to everybody.
Hey, Jackson, what about that bet?
Okay, Phil. You've got Stanford, and I've got Nebraska.
Hiya, pal. Is this seat taken, old pal, old pal?
Oh, fine. Yes, a young man has it. He'll be here in just a minute.
Oh, don't mention it, pal. Hey, friend of yours is a friend of mine.
This would happen to me.
How much dough you want to bet, Jackson?
Any amount you say, brother. Just name it.
Okay, $50.
$50, eh?
Take another number, Phil.
Oh, no. If he wants to bet $50, it's okay with me.
Quiet, quiet. I want to hear the game.
The game hasn't started yet.
No, thanks. I never touch it.
How can you talk to a guy like that?
Look, Jack, here comes the Nebraska team.
Oh, yeah. Gee, they're a husky bunch of fellas.
Yeah, listen to that crowd.
Yes, sir. You know, Gladys, I'll bet there are 90,000 people here.
That's terrible. 90,000 people without a home. Oh, my God. 90,000 people.
What are you talking about? They've got homes. They're here for the game.
Oh, no, you're just saying that because I'm your pal.
You're not my pal. I never saw you before in my life.
No, thanks. I never touch you.
I don't know why I always run into one of these guys. Ignore him, Gladys.
I am Gladys, old pal, old pal.
Don't you dare speak to her. Here, hold my coat, Mary.
He's on the floor already. What do you want?
Well, he can't talk like that.
Hey, look, Jackson, here comes that good old Stanford team out on the field.
Hey, those boys look pretty good, too, don't they, Gladys?
Oh, they're a swell bunch. Hello, fellas.
Hello, Gladys.
What?
Well, I'll be darned. She knows the whole team.
Well, that's the last straw. I'm leaving. I'm not even going to stay and see the game.
Oh, Speedy, calm down.
Calm down, nothing. And let me tell you something else, Gladys. The next time you go out with me and say hello to every Tom, Dick, and Harry we meet, remember,
so there you are, Don. That's exactly what happened at the Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day.
Jack really lost his head, huh?
He sure did.
Okay, I'm a fiery, jealous nature. What can I do? Play, Phil.
Okay, Speedy.
Friends, before dessert at dinner tomorrow, why not serve the family a real surprise, something delightfully different, like apple snow jello. A delicious combination of cold, spicy applesauce and crimson raspberry jello. Or try apricot pecan layers. Crunchy pecan meats and golden canned apricots molded in shimmering orange jello. These are just two of the many grand treats that you'll find described in the new Calendar of Desserts book. In this big 48-page recipe book, you'll discover 365 suggestions for all kinds of novel and tempting desserts, pastries, puddings, cakes, cookies, and of course, lots and lots of swell desserts made with delicious jello. And this unique calendar of desserts is just as beautiful as it is useful, too. Full of lovely paintings and handsome photographs in brilliant glowing colors. So be sure to send for your copy right away. Just mail 10 cents, just 10 cents, in coin or stamps to me, Don Wilson, care of General Foods, Battle Creek, Michigan. And this handy day-by-day recipe book will be forwarded to you at once. Don't wait until tomorrow, friends. Send 10 cents for your copy tonight.
We're a little late, so good night, folks.
The breeze is...
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Fred Allen Show from the 1940-41 season. We've started bringing these to you every week now on Thursday to go with the Jack Benny Show from the same season for a few reasons. One is because Kenny Baker's in it, and of course Kenny Baker was first on Jack's show, and then for this season he appears on the Fred Allen Show. Number two is that these shows have such great sound for Fred Allen shows. Not many Fred Allen shows have really good sound, and it's just so neat to bring you shows that are this crystal clear and beautiful sounding. And that I don't think any other show besides Fred Allen catches you and feels like you're in 1941, experiencing what's going on. Because he's always has topical humor, but humor that also spans time and is still funny today. The fact that, like I said, he has Kenny on the show is just a wonderful addition. And the fact that for the first episodes of this season, all of Kenny's numbers were cut by someone and not included in the episodes. Also, they had poor sound quality, but now these episodes have the full songs by Kenny Baker, and it's just wonderful to be able to hear them, and the full commercials and everything else that were in these wonderful shows. So I just thought you would enjoy stepping back in time with Fred Allen. The other thing with these shows that I've mentioned before is both the East and the West Coast feeds are available. I'm going to be presenting mostly the West Coast feeds, unless the East Coast sounds a whole lot better. And the reason I present the West Coast is that would be the second show of the night. So it would give Fred some time to fine-tune the episode and make it be more to his liking and tighten up the jokes a little bit. So it should be a little tighter of an episode. And so that's why I wanted to bring it to you. Of course, we bring you Fred Allen from 1945-46 season over on Saturdays, and that's with Rob bringing those to us. And Rob did a good job recently of explaining these episodes from the 1940-41 season. So I hope you're tuning in for both those Saturday shows, and you start tuning in for these Thursday shows as well. Well, without further ado, here is Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Minerva Pius, and the whole gang for some more fantastic Fred Allen. Enjoy.
The Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Portman Hoffa, the Martins, and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time.
Don't go near lover's lane. Let that old moon shine in vain. Keep leaves the coast clear, there's no telling here what the moonlight will start. Keep your mind on your keep a spy on your keep an eye on your heart.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that
Merchant of Merriment,
that
lovable buffoon,
that one and only
Fred
Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, look, Jimmy, before we start, always I have trouble with you when the program goes on the air. When it comes off, it's the sponsor. I mean, between the two, there are 60 minutes of entertainment. Now, but about this, what was this opening here, this composite introduction? Who were those nondescript people?
Oh, it's just a gang I picked up to help with the opening announcement.
You mean I am paying that migratory ensemble?
Yep, you owe them $3 apiece, Mr. Allen.
Oh, I do. Well, who told you?
Well, I did it for you, Fred. You know, the old hoorah buildup. Makes the show sound big.
And here he is, Fred Allen, in person.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute. You ought to have someone pace you into the mic from there. But now, wait a minute, Kenny. What is this?
I missed it, huh?
Yeah.
Don't I get my $3?
Now, Kenny, you were supposed to be on that mass announcement.
Yeah, I was the finale.
Well, you certainly were. Although you played it as an intermission, I must...
Well, I'm surprised.
I'm surprised at you, Kenny Baker, a singer with your reputation, stooping to group hawking to pick up a paltry $3.
Well, it's your fault, F.A.
My fault? How?
Last week, you made me make a resolution not to take
now,
a raise.
Wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. What was that? You invented a word there. Now,
last week, you made me make a resolution.
That's good.
Not to take a raise this year.
So?
I got to pick up a little chicken feed someplace.
The tenor is jesting.
The tenor is hungry.
All right, Kenny, if you want $3 so badly, I tell you what, I'll give you a chance to earn it. Now, there's a spot for you in the sketch tonight. A little extra part came up at the last minute due to certain conditions over which we had no control. This extra part came in there for you. Now, if you can act.
If I can act? Why, they used to call me the Orson Welles of the Boy Scouts Drama and Wigwag Club.
What plays were you ever in?
Mostly Shakespeare stuff.
Really?
You know, The Merchant of Venice, All's Well That Ends Much Ado About.
Well, that's all light miming, the light fantastic stuff, Kenny. Now, the acting in this sketch tonight runs the gamut of emotion.
Oh, I can do it, F.A. I'll give you an audition.
Well, all right. Now, we'll try, see what happens. Say, here's a line from the sketch. Now, you are supposed to be a cowboy. You meet another cowboy, and you say, I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch. Now, read it.
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch.
Fine. Now, we'll try it a little different. Now, let's say there has been a killing at Tombstone Gulch. You run 200 miles into town. You stagger up to the sheriff to report the killing. How would you read the line?
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, Sheriff.
Not quite. Not after running 200 miles, Kenny. But try and put something into it this time. We'll make it even more dramatic. Put you to the test. Now, you are mortally wounded. Shot through the heart with a poison arrow. Your dying words are...
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, Sheriff.
No, I'm sorry, Kenny. You won't do.
Well, how about if I use a dialect, F.A.? I'm great on Spanish.
Well, maybe that will help, Kenny. Let's have that same line in Spanish dialect.
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, senor.
Excellent. And as we leave Kenny to perfect his dramatic technique, we turn with relief to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Worst fog in New York history. Blanket City for 4 days, slowing down highway traffic, endangering navigation, and causing an estimated $1 million to airlines. To check on effects of the fog in local area, Texaco News interviews several fog victims to bring you their unusual stories. First, however, let us hear from a weather expert, Fielding Slush. What branch of the weather service do you specialize in, Fielding?
Well, I'm on the staff of a certain soft drink company.
In what capacity?
I am vice president in full charge of barometric prognostication.
What does a soft drink company need with a weather expert?
Well, have you seen that big Coca-Cola sign at 60th Street, the one that forecasts the weather?
Oh, yes, the neon lights up fair, warmer, cold, rain, etc.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am the man behind that neon.
Well, isn't it a little crowded with your bulk there?
It's a big sign.
But tell me, this neon business here, tell me, did this recent fog bother your Coca-Cola sign?
Oh, the fog was terrible. No one could read my prognostication on the sign on account of the fog.
What did your weather sign say?
Fog.
Well, what a dilemma. The fog and no one could read your prognostication. What did you do?
What did I do? For 4 days, I sat on top of that sign yelling, "Yoo-hoo, fog! Yoo-hoo!"
Brilliant strategy. As a weather expert, Fielding, what would you say caused this recent intense fog?
Well, the new Congress convened last week.
Yes?
Congress is always in a fog, you know.
Oh, and you think?
Somebody must have left the door open, and that fog got out.
You are a Republican if I've ever seen one, and I have seen one. And thank you, Fielding Slush. A man who had a most unusual experience in the fog was Captain Narcissus Bilge. Captain, you are a captain, aren't you? I reduced your rank there in a minute, although one could see your rank at first sight. was Captain Narcissus Bilge. What is your craft, Captain?
I'm skipper of the SS Dolly Dombrowski.
Out of Santo Domingo to New York?
Out of Weehawken to 42nd Street.
Oh, the Dolly Dombrowski is...
The Weehawken ferry.
Oh, I didn't...
I'm running them commuter cruises on the half hour.
Oh, I see. Well, what about this fog, Captain?
I've been sailing the Hudson River crosswise for 40 years. And blow me down, I never seen nothing like it.
What happened?
Tuesday morning, I'm docked in Weehawken.
Yeah?
I'm up on a bridge. It's just rung 8 bells. I'm trying to figure out what time it is.
Yeah?
The mate comes running up. He says, "It's a heavy fog, Captain, off a starboard."
A pea super, huh?
Oh, this was a pea super with croutons in it. I can't see the wheel, and I got it in me hand.
In this terrible fog, you sailed for New York regardless.
What can I do? It's the tradition of the sea. I gotta make 42nd Street.
But if you couldn't see anything...
I'm sailing from memory. I set me course. I ought to be there in 12 minutes.
Yes?
The Dolly Dombrowski's creeping along. I'm blowing the foghorn. I'm watching the clock.
Yes?
At the end of 12 minutes, if I feel a bump, I'll know it's 42nd Street.
And?
The 12 minutes is up, I don't feel no bump.
Yes?
14 minutes, I don't feel no bump. The Dolly Dombrowski's creeping along.
Yes?
17 minutes, I don't feel no bump.
Well, what did you do?
I pulled 3 blasts on me foghorn.
Yes?
And I hear a voice yell, "Hey, you, pull over to the curve." It's a mounted cop.
A mounted cop in the Hudson River?
What river? The Dolly Dombrowski's at the corner of 33rd and Broadway.
Well, what did you...
The cop says, "What are you doing with this frigate in traffic?" He's fixing to give me a ticket. I think fast. I talk him out of it.
Well, how could you account for being in the middle of Broadway in a ferry boat?
I says to the cop, "Which way did the Macy Parade go?"
And the cop?
He says, "They went that way. What kept you?"
A stroke of nautical genius, and thank you, Professor Narcissus Bilge. A young lady who lost her job on account of the fog was Sappho Maguire. What was your job, Sappho?
I was hostess at Coconut Charlie's.
Coconut Charlie's? What is that?
It's like Sloppy Joe's, only with coconuts.
Oh, one of those open-air drink emporiums.
Yeah, I used to slink around a counter wearing a sarong.
Oh, for atmosphere. And what were your duties?
Well, when a customer come in, I'd slink over, give him a glass of coconut milk.
Yeah?
Then I'd take me mallet, whap open the coconut, and pass him the inside. It's got vitamins in it.
Oh, really? Well, tell me, what about the fog?
Well, it's a busy day. I'm slinking and passing and whapping, going along like always.
Yeah?
All of a sudden, it's foggy. I can't see nothing.
Did it slow up business?
Nah, voices is coming out of the fog. I'm slinking and passing out coconut milk.
Yeah?
Then I'm feeling around on the counter, whapping a coconut, handing out the inside, and all the time the fog keeps getting white. Then it happens.
Then what happens?
Well, I'm slinking and flapping and passing. I rolls out a coconut.
Yes?
I can't see it in the fog, but it feels like a beauty.
Oh.
The hair is long and silky.
Yes?
I pick up me mallet and whap it. Bang! There's a thud. I light a match, and what's on the floor?
What?
Coconut Charlie. He's out like a light.
You mean his head?
Charlie's coconut was on the counter, and I whapped it.
And you got fired?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing today?
I'm with a burlesque show. The work is easier.
Well, how do you mean?
I'm still slinking, but I ain't whapping and passing.
Watch out for my coconut on the runway. And thank you, Steph-O McGuire. A gentleman who had a most unique experience in the recent fog was Mott Murtry. You had a difficult time in the fog, Mott?
Don't mention fog to me.
Why not, Mott?
I got pneumonia, chilled brains, beat up, and a $10 fine.
Out of the fog?
It wasn't out of a clear sky, brother.
Well, how did it happen?
Well, confidentially, I'm a dipsomaniac.
You are? Well, you don't look like a drinking man, Mott.
Well, I fool everybody. It's because I don't stagger, and I ain't got no veins in me nose.
No veins in your nose?
They must have give up and went back into me head.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, you seem sober now.
Oh, yeah. I spent last week in a Turkish bath in the steam room.
But what about this fog dilemma of yours?
Well, sir, I wakes up Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. My mouth tastes like a camel just took his foot out of it.
And your head?
My head feels like somebody's playing badminton in there with cannonballs.
You were still in the steam room.
Yeah, I can't see nothing. I put on my sheet. I start groping for a towel.
Yes?
I keep walking through the steam, groping. I don't feel no towel. Seems like I'm walking for miles.
Yes?
Finally, I feel the towel. I start wiping my face. The next thing I know, sheet and all, boom, I'm in a patrol.
Arrested? Why?
Well, the door to Turkish bath must have been open. With the steam and the fog, I couldn't tell the difference.
And when they picked you up?
I'm out in Times Square with a sheet on, wiping my face in the back of a traffic cop's coat.
Well, what did the judge give you?
$10 fine.
For stealing the sheet?
No, for impersonating Mahatma Gandhi.
Thank you, Mott Murtry. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker, a young man who was always in a fog, emerges from it long enough to sing for us, You Walk By.
Sunlight's gleam. You speak words and shame the birds that sing. Your smile is softer than the touch of spring. You walk by and children pause at play. Walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here and not above. When you walk by, my love. Magicians can make things disappear. Or pull a rabbit out of a hat. But your loveliness, my dear, does greater things than that. You walk by and children pause at play. You walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here and not above.
very nice, Kenny.
Oh, say, Fred, excuse me. Did you drop this cigar out of your pocket?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Larry. I'm glad you found it. This is an exploding cigar.
An exploding cigar?
Confidentially, yes. I've got a little score to even with Jimmy Wallington, so I went to Al Goodman's brother-in-law and bought this El Bango wholesale. Now, I'm going to give it to Jimmy right now. So you... No, don't laugh. You stick around. You'll see that mustache of Wallington's hit the ceiling. And I guarantee you it'll look better on the ceiling than it looks on here. Jimmy.
Oh, you want me, Fred?
Yes, James, old boy. Here, have a cigar.
Gee, thanks, Fred. Say, this looks like an expensive one.
Yes, Jimmy. Cigars like this are going up every day, too. Put it in your mouth. I'll light it up for you.
Thanks, Fred. Hey, it tastes pretty good.
Say, take a good deep drag, Jimmy. You'll get a big bang out of it.
Oh, yeah? Well, for your information, Fred, this cigar won't explode.
Why, Jimmy, how did you know that...
I overheard what you said to Larry Elliott.
No kidding. Oh, yeah. Well, but how did you know it wouldn't explode?
Well, didn't you say you bought it from Al's brother-in-law?
Yeah.
Well, he sold you a dud.
No kidding.
Sure. Thanks for the smoke and the object lesson.
Well, what object lesson?
Oh, well, an exploding cigar that won't explode is a dud, Fred. Just like the duds in gasoline, those useless, slow-action elements that won't go off. And duds are not only a drag on your engine these cold mornings, they can be a drain on your battery, too. Remember, for a quick start, you depend on just a few ounces of chilled gasoline in your carburetor. And in those few ounces, gasoline duds show up at their worst, because they won't vaporize readily, won't take the spark instantly. That's why duds are a cause of long, drawn-out starts and consequent battery trouble. But the duds are out of Texaco Fire Chief. Removed by an important refining process. They're out, so you can enjoy fast Fire Chief starts, quick pickup, and economical power. So next time, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief at regular gasoline prices. Remember, there's not a dud in a tank full.
Ensemble, have just come out even, strangely enough. Congratulations, you came out even, Maestro. In a musical composition, well, it's pretty hard to do with 18 to 20 men there, suffering from malnutrition and up this late at night coming out even. It's a tribute. They have just completed Perfidia. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, Mr. Allen, I think I've got it.
Got what, Kenny?
I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch. How's that?
No, you have to put more feeling in it, Kenny.
Well, do you want the feeling as I'm riding in, or shall I start feeling around Tombstone Gulch?
You have got to feel the whole thing, Kenny.
Okay, I'll keep rehearsing. I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch with feeling.
Oh, gosh, that kid's got me worried.
Something with Kenny is wrong?
No, it's nothing. It's nothing, Mr. Goodman. I just promised foolishly to put Kenny in the sketch tonight. Now I'm afraid he can't act.
I, Goodman, can help Kenny, maybe.
You keep away from Kenny. He's apt to catch a dialect.
I, Goodman, just from Tombstone Gulch, wrote in. I can show Kenny how to read it.
Yeah, I would like to see you say whoa to that horse you are riding into Tombstone. He will stop in all directions. You'll show Kenny how to read it. You mean that you are an actor?
By any chance, you are seeing years ago on a billboard the name Tomaszewski?
Tomaszewski? Why, certainly.
In English, it means Goodman.
Now, don't tell me that you were an actor in the old country.
For 5 years in Russia, Goodman is a matinee idol.
And then?
They are cutting out matinees. Goodman is just idle.
Fine. Well, I tell you, you go over and see what you can do for Kenny.
I, Goodman, just rode in from Tombstone Gulch.
What I go through on this program...
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch.
Fortunately. I've never seen the old gulch as busy as it is tonight. You rode in, too, not you. What is this?
Well, I can say it better than Kenny.
Well, that still doesn't make it good.
Can I be in a sketch sometime?
Well, we'll see.
On Jack Benny's show, Mary's in everything.
Well, she's got something on Benny. I lead a good, clean life.
Poor Dennis Day. Jack makes him see Love Thy Neighbor every day.
Oh, Benny makes everybody on his program see his picture every day.
It's compulsory?
Clause 7 in the standard Benny contract. And I'll tell you why. When Benny makes a picture, you know, he gets paid in tickets, you see. It's not really a lot of tickets. It's just one big due bill on the Paramount Theater, you see. It's about 4 feet long. And he tears this all up and makes it into tickets. And he pays off his cast, the radio program cast, with these tickets. So where can Dennis Day go if he's using Paramount tickets for money?
To the Paramount.
Correct. It's too bad there's no prize. You'd have had something there. Now, what about our guest?
He's a smokestack watcher.
What is a smokestack watcher?
He's a man who watches smokestacks.
What kind of a profession is that?
You'll have to ask our guest. Mr. Allen, meet Mr. Patrick Brennan.
Well, good evening, Mr. Brennan.
Good evening, Fred.
Portland's explanation of your profession has left me a little bewildered, Mr. Brennan. Now, just what is it you do for a living?
Fred, I watch stacks.
You watch stacks? Well, I must say that is a most unusual occupation. May I ask what company employs you in this odd capacity?
I work for the Consolidated Edison Company of New York.
And you watch the stacks in case any smoke comes out.
That's right.
In other words, Mr. Brennan, you are in the coke and soot business. But, tell me, what is your purpose in watching these stacks?
Well, Fred, if black smoke is coming out of the stacks, it means there is some trouble.
In other words, a certain amount of the company's coal is being wasted.
That's right.
Well, is any other purpose served by your funnel kibitzing, Mr. Brennan?
Yes, it fulfills the public service.
In what way?
New York air, for sanitary reasons, must be kept as free as possible from impurities.
Well, that is a laudable crusade, Mr. Brennan, to help purify the New York air, and you certainly are right about the smoke content of the New York City atmosphere. If Santa Claus ever went down a chimney in New York, he'd come out looking like Rochester's father. Now, Mr. Brennan, I think folks might be interested in hearing what constitutes a day's work for a stack watcher. Now, would you mind if I took one of your days apart?
Not at all, Fred.
Fine. Now, you report for duty early in the morning. You station yourself in your tower opposite the plant. What is your first move?
Fred, I start watching the stacks.
Good. Now, well, let's say the boiler rooms below are functioning perfectly. Nothing but a colorless vapor floats from the chimneys. No passé coal is on the wing. Things continue to run smoothly for an hour or two. What do you do?
I just keep watching the stacks, Fred.
Well, doesn't this get monotonous after a while?
Not to me, Fred. It's my job.
Well, tell me, what happens if you do see a little smoke start to seep from one of the funnels? Do you yell bingo and call it a day?
No, I press a button.
And what does that do?
It signals the engineer in the boiler room.
And after you've pressed the button and the funnel stops ad-libbing, what do you do then, Mr. Brennan?
I just keep watching the stakes.
Well, working on a job like yours hasn't given you a one-stack mind by any chance.
No, Fred. We have four stacks at our plant.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my error. Well, during an average 8-hour day, Mr. Brennan, about how many times will you have to signal the engineer?
Maybe once or twice.
And what do you do the rest of the day, Mr. Brennan?
I just keep watching the stakes.
Well, Mr. Brennan, it's been nice having you over. What MGM has done for Edison the boy and Edison the man, you have done tonight for Edison the company.
Why, thank you, Fred.
But before you go, I have a little job for you, if you care to undertake it.
Well, what kind of is it?
Well, as I understand it, you are an authority on smoke of all kinds. No murky vapor is too thick for you to catalog. So tomorrow night, I'd like to have you come with me and analyze some smoky air that should defy anything you have ever seen.
Where are you going?
To the opening of a new nightclub on 52nd Street.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Stax, Mr. Patrick Brennan, who skipped two lines. I'd rather to the opening of a new... I'll read. Mr. Brennan left out a couple of lines. I'll read them because I don't want you folks to miss anything here tonight. I say to the opening of a new nightclub on 52nd Street, Mr. Brennan says, no thanks, I'd rather keep watching my stacks. I say, and save the covers charge. He says, good night, Fred. I say, good night and thank you, stacks. Mr. Patrick Brennan, build up that up time, and that's the end. You see, you missed a little, but you'll never notice it now. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Tonight we pay tribute to the Martins. Their fan club has come here all the way from where?
The Bronx.
From the Bronx, you see. They can hear you up there. We won't need the radio for that. Just open a window, somebody. The Martins fan club is here. And tonight they rehearse a number for their Roxy debut tomorrow. People will be coming from California tomorrow to the Roxy. Their number is called The Story of a Horn.
Young man, if you keep playing this way, you'll blow your brittle world to bits of glass. Change your horn to a thing of twisted brass.
Young man, you should have cracked from the train.
Do, do, lo, lo. There comes a time when just an empty sack can be the straw that breaks your back. Lord only knows just why he was born. No time to learn how to read or write. He sleeps all day, but he plays all night. He's a young man with a horn. When he's sending, he goes for notes that horns will never play, but still he keeps on sending out of the world and far away. So if you hear a tune being torn, just like a life that's been ripped apart, some way down deep in his soul and heart, it's that young man blowing his horn. Da, 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 he
he's that young man with the horn. When he's sending, he goes for notes that horns will never play, but still he keeps on sending out of the world and far away. So if you hear a tune being torn, just like a life that's been ripped apart, from way down deep in his soul and heart, it's that young man.
That number was dedicated to the
Martin... Move over, brother. This is where I begin.
Well, who in the world...
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the voice of Swami Sam. Swami Sam, the smartest, spiritualist, psychic, and soothsayer this side of Siam.
Oh, just a minute, Sam.
Quiet, Bud. You're interrupting my commercial.
What commercial?
Well, I'm advertising my fortune-telling service for motorists. For a small fee, me and the spirits will sit in your front seat and help you with your driving problems.
What driving problems?
Well, supposing your windshield gets so spotty you can't see through it. I gaze into my crystal ball and tell you what lies ahead. Now, if you worry about your antifreeze, I'll go
just a minute. I'm sorry, Swami, but the motoring public isn't interested in your crystal gazing, Sam. And Jimmy Wallington will tell you why. Give the Swami a load there, will you, Jimmy?
It's true that there are always a lot of little driving problems that crop up in winter weather. Windshields seem to be forever getting spotted and grimy. And there's that guessing, too, about the strength of your antifreeze. And perhaps that doubt in your mind about the battery. But you don't need a Swami. Just remember that it's no trouble at all for a Texaco dealer to take care of these things for you. Just drive in. A Texaco dealer will quickly clean the rear window as well as your windshield. He'll gladly test your radiator, tell you whether or not you need more antifreeze. He'll also check the battery and the tires. Moreover, he's planned for your personal comfort, too, by providing a neat and tidy place in which to freshen up, identified by the green and white Texaco registered restroom sign. So stop in anytime. You're always welcome at a Texaco dealer. Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Ladies and gentlemen, the question of the week. This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Roundtable, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some unimportant issue of the day. Fred takes his place at the roundtable, where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time. Are you ready, Fred?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jimmy. I was going to start over there. Fortunately, you called my attention. Portland, the forum is officially open. Will you kindly introduce our first guest?
Yes, Mr. Richard Rossback from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mr. Rossback.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your profession?
Why, I'm a statistician.
A statistician. And what are the duties of a statistician? Are you in any particular line or just a statistician at large? Statisticking around.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Allen. I'd say that a statistician was sort of an underpaid cross between an office boy, a bond salesman, and a customer's man.
Well, that sounds rather confusing. And while I'm working on that, thank you, Mr. Rossback, I'll have to figure out just what it is you do. I work on two problems simultaneously. Yeah, I'm weighing that in my mind, and we'll pass along now to the next guest.
Yes, Mrs. Bertine Powers from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mrs.
Good
Powers.
Good evening, Mr. Allen. I'm a seer.
Wait, oh. You see, you read my mind. I was going to ask you that. You see what you did? Oh, you minx, you sly one. I was going to ask you, what do you do? And you said you are a seer.
Just think of it.
Well, what sort of a seer, may I ask?
Oh, I can look at you.
Really?
And see into your records Just as you are.
Looking
you know what
at
Emerson
me?
Said? That which you are shout so loud that I cannot hear what you say.
Emerson said that?
Yes.
He also said something pertinent that had to do with a mousetrap, too, didn't he?
Something like that.
But you don't have to build a better mousetrap today. All you have to do is have a little cheese and the rats will close in on you. Before you're back, your turn. But you mean to say that you can sit there, Mrs. Powers, and read me, I mean, just by looking at me?
Yes, it would be a pleasure.
Really? It's rather dull, isn't it? I mean, now that you... Are you reading me now?
I'll tell you later.
Oh, I wouldn't. Well, all right. I'd like to discuss myself with you. I am a skin full of inhibitions, incidentally. I would like to take inventory a little later. Thank you. And now, Portland.
Mr. Og Fitzgerald from Larchmont, New York.
Mr. Og Fitzgerald?
Yes, sir. Hello, Fred.
Mr. Fitzgerald, how do you do at this unearthly hour? May I ask your profession? In California, it isn't. It's 20 to 10.
I'm a newspaper artist. Illustrator, cartoonist.
Cartoonist on for some feature syndicate?
No, Wall Street Journal and Barron's Financial Weekly. They're both good papers. Fred.
Well, I know. I never get that far downtown. I'm always waylaid by panhandlers between here and Wall Street. I've never made it in 15 years. I'm now carrying a percolator with me. I'm giving hot coffee on the hour.
A lot of the boys on the street could use a little hot coffee.
Well, they're using it. I'm devoting the rest of my life to keeping them awake. I put them to sleep with the radio, then give them coffee money to wake them up as soon as I'm through. Well, I'm sorry I haven't got time. Your business is making Wall Street laugh.
Just a little sunbeam, you know, on a sure. unhappy street.
Yes, you're the little ray. What did you finish at on the big board today?
Well, I was off an eighth.
You were off an eighth. Well, I'm off half and have been so since birth. Well, that seems to bring us through some prank of the dialogue to our question. And tonight we take up a bit of marital trivia that has caused a million squabbles in a million homes. Now, in a recent divorce case, are you reading me, Miss Powers? You looked away. There's more to me than that. You haven't read me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me that I am an old digest version here. But in a recent divorce case, the wife said that all of the trouble had originally started at the breakfast table. The husband insisted on reading the morning paper during breakfast and ignoring his wife. Many wives I know resent this practice. And our question tonight is, do you think a husband should read the morning paper at the breakfast table, or should he lavish all of his attention on the bacon and eggs and his wife in that order? Now, Mr. Rossback, are you married?
No, I'm not.
Well, you won't be much help to us, will you, in this particular...
I'm afraid not.
Well, what about the theory of it? Do you think a husband has the Bill of Rights entitles him to read the morning paper at the breakfast table?
Well, I'd say that if he were a Dodger fan, why, he had every right in the world to read the paper.
Well, now you have swerved the Martin fan club to your own purposes here through mentioning another Brooklyn institution. That's unfair, Mr. Rossback. But how do you feel about the morning paper, Mrs. Powers?
What if you sleep through breakfast?
If you sleep through breakfast? Well, of course, it wouldn't make any difference to you. You could just stay there and read your husband, I suppose, from two rooms away. But we were thinking of the average person, Miss Powers.
I wouldn't like that at all.
You wouldn't care for the husband who read the... You think the husband would find more lines in the paper than he would in his wife? Mr. Fitzgerald, how do you feel about the morning paper?
Well, being an old newspaper man, I get breakfast myself.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you read the paper as you're making your own breakfast?
Oh, no, I don't get it till I get to the station, but my wife gets up and drives me to the station.
Oh, and then you both sit there and read the paper and
no,
go your separate way?
I just duck for the train.
You duck for the train?
Usually late, yes.
Well, I'm sorry that I haven't gone. I'd like to know how you get now from the train. What goes on with this paper, Mr. Fitzgerald? But unfortunately, I am pressed for time as usual.
Yeah, we've got 17 minutes. Yes.
I know, but that's your theory. There is another greater a power, a divinity that shapes the end of our program here in a very few minutes. And our little forum stands 100% perplexed, and I doubt that our decision tonight will revolutionize the literary tendencies of a single husband at a breakfast table tomorrow morning. If the husband is boss, he'll continue to read his paper. If the wife is boss, he'll continue to go without his paper. And if the marriage is a 50-50 proposition, The husband will show up at breakfast with a tabloid paper so his wife can look over the top and at least see the husband as he reads. On this bewildering note, our meeting adjourns, and thank you all. You can close my mind, Miss Powers. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker.
I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch.
No, not now, Kenny. This is your song. What is your number again?
Oh, Beautiful Dreamer.
Could we trouble you, Mr. Goodman?
Beautiful dreamer, wake unto me. Starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee. Sounds of a rude world heard in the day, lulled by the moonlight, have all passed away. Beautiful dreamer, queen of my song, while I woo thee with soft melody. Gone are the cares of life's busy throng. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me.
Thank you, Larry Elliott. Now tell us about Sky Chief Gasoline.
Thank you, Fred. Ladies and gentlemen, Sky Chief is...
Mr. Allen! Mr. Allen!
Portland, you're interrupting Mr. Elliott's dissertation here.
I know, but please don't let him talk about Sky Chief tonight, Mr. Allen. Mama's listening in.
Well, so what?
Mama's a daredevil. If she hears Mr. Elliott say Sky Chief makes driving seem like flying...
Oh, you think she'll...
Yes, Mama will fill up her car with Sky Chief and start looping the loop over fences and things.
Really?
And at her age, it just isn't right.
Oh, now, wait, Portland. I wouldn't say that Sky Chief will have that effect. On the contrary, I believe it will make your mother a better, smoother driver.
But how could it do that? Mama's only been driving about 5 months.
Oh, it doesn't matter whether you've been driving a car for 5 months or 5 years. When you step on the starter, you're eager for a quick getaway, aren't you?
Yes.
And when you reach a steep hill, you wish you were over it, don't you?
Of course.
And when you're in traffic, you don't like to shift, do you?
Of course not.
Well, that's why a different premium gasoline like Texaco Sky Chief can make your mental driving life easier and your performance as a driver smoother. And here's the reason. Texaco Sky Chief supplies you with flexible, surging power. Power that gives you satisfying takeoffs, thrilling glides over the hills, real confidence in traffic. Yes, Sky Chief has a way of bringing out the finest performance in any car. Try it. It's your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best at the usual premium price.
And And now the Texaco Workshop players, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, this battered little covey takes cognizance of the vogue that is sweeping radio at the moment. Tonight, they turn their artistic fluoroscope on the many programs that shower money on people in their studio audiences. You have all heard these philanthropic fiestas that clutter the networks. Whisk your dial to any number. What do you hear?
Hello? Hello? This is the Pot of Gold calling.
Ask It Basket is on the air.
Double or nothing.
Take it or leave it.
Here's your money, Mr. Dokes.
20 crisp new $1 bills.
50
go
crisp
to.
New bills, go to.
1,000 crisp new bills,
double
go
or nothing.
Take it or leave it.
Double.
Nothing.
Take it.
Leave it.
Here's your money. Money, 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 money,
money. Yes, folks. Over your radio, an endless stream of dollars goes to others, not to you. Have you ever envied these lucky winners, their good fortune? Don't, for winning quiz money seldom leads to happiness. To prove our point, we bring you a sketch tonight called All Is Not Gold That Glitters, or the true story of Timkin Slaw. Our hero, Timkin Slaw, was a humble commuter from Nutley, New Jersey. For years, as he sped through the Holland Tunnel on the 7 a.m. bus and mulled over the quizzes he had been exposed to the night before, Timkin secretly envied the lucky winners. He vowed that one day he, too, would be a quiz winner. And finally, 2 years later, his big moment did arrive. And one cold winter's night, Timkin Slaw found himself a contestant on Professor Diz's program. Trembling, he stepped up to the microphone and heard jolly old Professor Diz say...
And here's our next contestant. Your name, please?
Timkin Slaw. I'm from Nutley, New Jersey.
And what is your business, Mr. Slaw?
I'm a kite retailer.
You sell kites retail?
No, if the tail comes off your kite, I retail it.
I see. Well, here is your question, Mr. Slaw. Who is the only president of the United States ever to be elected for a third a term?
President, third term? Gee, that's a sticker.
Oh, come, Mr. Slaw, that's not too hard. I'll give you a hint. The initials are F.D. F.D.
Father Divine?
No, F.D.R. It's Franklin D.
Roosevelt.
That is correct, absolutely correct. And for his brilliant answer to that difficult question, the makers of Minute Mom, the marmalade that moms in a minute, present Mr. Slaw with two shiny silver dollars.
Oh, $2. I did it. I did it. I did it.
Yes, Timkin Slaw had done it. Clutching his newfound wealth to his little chicken breast, the white meat, Timkin reeled into an Orange Julius stand on Broadway. Here he toasted himself with a double Orange Julius straight. But as Timkin sipped his yokel zombie and waited for the owl bus back to Nutley, word of his good fortune was spreading like wildfire through the town. Mr. Blab, the Nutley big mouth, said to his wife,
"Did you hear the news, Carrie? Timkin Slaw won $10 on the radio."
2 minutes later, Mrs. Blab was on the phone calling Mrs. Dow.
"Did you hear the news, Sarah? Timkin Slaw won $50 on the radio."
A man named Kelly overheard the call on his party line. A little later, Kelly walked into Nutley's leading saloon and yelled,
"Did you hear the news, fellas? Timkin Slaw won $200 on the radio."
Yes, and the news kept spreading until it reached Nutley's radio station. A few minutes later, over Nutley's powerful 75 water, came this message.
"Flash, Nutley's leading citizen, Timkin Slaw, has just won $500 on the radio in New York. Congratulations, Timkin Slaw."
Meantime, totally unaware of the furor his prize-winning escapade had aroused, Timkin Slaw, reeking of Orange Julius, double strength, fumes, arrives home to be greeted by his wife.
"Hello, Lydia."
"Timkin, you darling, I've been waiting for you."
"Say, what are all these bundles, Lydia?"
"A new fur coat for me, set of golf clubs for you, a new windbreaker for Grandma, and I made a down payment on a second-hand car."
"But, Lydia, what's this extravagance?
Extravagance? Why, Timkin, we still have $400 left. You won
$1,000." $1,000? I only won $2.
"Timkin Slaw, you're lying to me."
"No, I'm not."
"Oh, yes, you are. Now that you're rich, you want to throw me aside like an old union suit."
"Oh, honest, Lydia. I only won $2. You can ask Professor Diz."
"Don't lie, you gigolo. You're going to spend that money on another woman."
"But I don't know any other woman, except Mama." "Gee, Lydia."
"Oh, don't worry, false. Timken. I won't stand in your way.
Lydia, take off your gaiters. Where are you going, Lydia?
To the Goodwill Court. Goodbye.
But fortunately, Lydia never got to the Goodwill Court. Timken hurried after Lydia and intercepted her before she could even reach We the People. Domestic peace finally was restored, and the following morning, Timken caught the early bus and went to work as usual, as he had just punched the time clock, a nasty left hook, when the boss, Mr. Otis, sent for him. Timken, sensing a raise, entered Mr. Otis's office.
You sent for me, boss?
Why, yes, Slaw. Before you get away, I want to say goodbye.
Goodbye? I'm not going anyplace, Mr. Otis.
Don't tell me you're going to keep working in this dump after winning $5,000.
But Mr. Otis, I only won $2.
All you rich are the same, hushing up your wealth.
Oh, no, honest. I only...
Well, goodbye, Slaw.
You mean I'm fired?
Oh, pish, tush, Slaw, not fired. You've merely outgrown the organization. Well, goodbye, Slaw. Drop me a postcard from Palm Beach.
Palm Beach? I can't even get back to Nutley.
And so our lucky quiz winner, jobless and frustrated, hitchhiked his forlorn way back to Nutley. As he wearily opened the front door of the modest model Slaw home and wondered how he could break the sad news to his wife, Timken noticed a sinister-looking fellow lurking in the foyer. As Timken closed the door, he addressed this little sinister man.
Are you looking for someone, sir?
Is your name Timken Slaw?
Yes, sir.
I'm the income tax department.
The income tax?
Yeah, you won $50,000. Uncle Sam wants his cut.
$50,000? I only won $2.
Evading your income tax, eh? You're coming with me.
Coming where?
I'm taking you to Hal.
Hal Ickes?
No, Hal Catrass.
For many months, Timken, the lucky quiz winner, languished in jail. Finally, his time served, his pardon consummated, the ball and chain were removed from Timken's leg, and he was free. As an ex-jailbird, however, Timken found himself wifeless, jobless, friendless, penniless, and alone. Sinking lower and lower, he cursed the $2 quiz prize that had started his downfall. One day, as Timken shuffled along the Bowery in his tattered Norfolk jacket, wearing a brisk north wind for underwear, Timken saw a crowd of beaten men milling around the front of a cheap hotel. As Timken joined this mob of derelicts, a dapper gentleman in the center of the scum leaned out and addressed him.
Hey, you, step in here, bum.
Who, me?
Yeah, what is your opinion of the world situation, Trash?
I don't know. Not so good, I guess.
Splendid. Very well put, outcast. Our radio audience will get a kick out of your opinion.
Radio audience? Is this a broadcast?
This here's the Vox Drop program, bum. We're broadcasting from Happy Hyman's Flophouse right now. What's your name, fleabait?
Timken Slaw.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, for his brilliant answer to our Vox Drop question, Timken Slaw gets 2 shiny silver dollars.
Oh, no, not that. Anything but that, mister.
A bum refusing money?
Oh, I have my reasons, sir.
Quit kidding. You won these $2. Here, I'll put them in your pocket.
No, rather than that, I'll end it all.
Hey, come out of that shooting gallery. Put down that gun.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Oh. Hey, speak to me, bud. Speak to me. Why wouldn't you take the $2?
I'm not going through all that again. Better death than be a quiz winner.
He's dead. Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, you have just heard this mysterious suicide. What is the motive back of it? Send in your answers to Vox Drop, folks. Join this exciting new Timken Slaw murder quiz. The person sending in the best answer will receive, absolutely free, 2 shiny silver dollars.
Thus the fate of our lucky quiz winner, Timken Slaw. Even Timken's death started a new radio contest. The moral, ladies and gentlemen, is never envy the person you hear winning $2 on a radio quiz program. It is worth more than $2 to be seen in public with a master of ceremonies. The end. And now, for Mr. Larry Elliott, a message of importance to the music lovers of this entire Western Hemisphere.
Each week, millions of radio listeners in the United States, Canada, and by shortwave to all of Latin America are guests of the Texas Company during the Saturday afternoon broadcast of the Metropolitan Opera Company. This week, you are invited to hear the sixth Saturday matinee of the season, Verdi's popular Il Trovatore, beloved for such favorite melodies as the Anvil Chorus and the Miserere. The Texas Company also invites you to enjoy, during intermissions, several interesting features, including the Opera Question Forum with noted musical authorities and with Mr. Milton Cross as Master of Ceremonies, and curtain talks on Our American Way of Living by distinguished guest speakers. The broadcast is heard over another network of 208 stations this Saturday, January 11th. Consult your newspaper for time and station.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. And don't forget, please, next Wednesday evening, the Texaco Star Theater brings you skiing information.
When I feel myself falling on skis, what should I do?
Don't worry, lady. You'll do it.
Your song of the week. Well, wake up, John Charles. What about your song?
I ain't singing nothing on the radio till me lawyer gets here.
I understand. And our guest will be...
Nelson Eliscu, the dog caterer.
And music. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.